A few years later, as a young doctor, I was confronted with an especially stark example of the medical model in action. I was then moonlighting at a Catholic hospital, doing physical examinations on women who'd been admitted to receive electroshock treatment for depression. Being my curious immigrant self, I looked up from the charts to ask them about their lives. Many of them spilled out stories of painful marriages, difficult children, and guilt over abortions. As they spoke, they visibly brightened and often thanked me effusively for listening to them. Some of them wondered if they really still needed electroshock after having gotten so much off their chests. I always felt sad at the end of these meetings, knowing that the treatments that would be administered the following morning would erase all memory of our conversation. I did not last long in that job. On my days off from the ward at MMHC, I often went to the Countway Library of Medicine to learn more about the patients I was supposed to help. One Saturday afternoon, I came across a treatise that is still revered today, Eugen Bleuler's 1911 textbook, Dementia Praecox. Bleuler's observations were fascinating. He wrote, "Among schizophrenic body hallucinations, the sexual ones are by far the most frequent and the most important. All the raptures and joys of normal and abnormal sexual satisfaction are experienced by these patients, but even more frequently, every obscene and disgusting practice which the most extravagant fantasy can conjure up. Male patients have their semen drawn off. Painful erections are stimulated. The women patients are raped and injured in the most devilish ways. In spite of the symbolic meaning of many such hallucinations, the majority of them correspond to real sensations." This made me wonder. Our patients had hallucinations. The doctors routinely asked about them and noted them as signs of how disturbed the patients were. But if the stories I'd heard in the wee hours were true, could it be that these hallucinations were in fact the fragmented memories of real experiences? Were hallucinations just the concoctions of sick brains? Could people make up physical sensations they had never experienced? Was there a clear line between creativity and pathological imagination, between memory and imagination? These questions remain unanswered to this day, but research has shown that people who've been abused as children often feel sensations, such as abdominal pain, that have no obvious physical cause. They hear voices warning of danger or accusing them of heinous crimes. There was no question that many patients on the ward engaged in violent, bizarre, and self-destructive behaviors, particularly when they felt frustrated, thwarted, or misunderstood. They threw temper tantrums, hurled plates, smashed windows, and cut themselves with shards of glass. At that time, I had no idea why someone might react to a simple request, such as, "Let me clean that goop out of your hair," with rage or terror. I usually followed the lead of the experienced nurses who signaled when to back off, or, if that did not work, to restrain a patient. I was surprised and alarmed by the satisfaction I sometimes felt after I'd wrestled a patient to the floor so a nurse could give an injection, and I gradually realized how much of our professional training was geared to helping us stay in control in the face of terrifying and confusing realities.